So, hi, I'm Larry Goldfarb, and welcome to What Happens When Feldenkrais Trainings Move Online. I'm going to have a conversation today with Patrick Gruner, who's, wow, look at that screen you have, Patrick. It looks very, very posh. Patrick and I talked a couple of months ago following one of my webinars about how to teach online, and we got into a conversation about teaching and trainings online. Patrick was particularly concerned about that because I think the following week you were starting your first online segment.
That's right.
And since then, you've done, have you done six segments?
No, I did I've been basically teaching, I'm going into my 18th week now of online teaching in six different training programs. In every training year, we actually graduated one program online just recently, and I'm going to start a graduation segment on Wednesday again. So basically, besides one week, I have been constantly teaching since we last met, Larry.
And so, besides Zoom fatigue,
I'm actually excited about it. I'm not so fatigued.
oh, that's good. That's good. Well, I'm teasing you because actually, I'm so grateful for having this medium, right? I mean, it's pretty exciting. So, it's funny to me because at a time when some of our colleagues are talking about, well, can we teach trainings online? You're doing it. So I wonder, well, how about we just, what's your first impression of doing
About the
teaching
whole
online?
process. Yeah. So actually, I mean, the one thing I really learned out of that is it's going to be a part of every training I'm going to teach in the future, because it has in many, many respects so many advantages. There's parts which you never can do online, which needs to be satisfied in the training program. And I mean, it's really hard to say because the more I do online, the more I see how to do it online. So it's not, in the beginning, I was basically thinking, well, the most difficult part is probably to graduate a training program. Well, we did a graduation and it works actually better than all the FI practicas I ever did live. So the students were sending in videos, we were showing the videos, they explained while we were watching the videos what they thought, how they did the lessons. We could scroll back in the video to a certain section which we wanted to relook at and things like that. So it was a wonderful process for the trainees. And then my next concern would have been how do you teach a third year? Because people need to learn how to use their hands and be sensitive about their touching and all these things. And how do they get the basic ideas of how we approach our clients online while I'm not in the room? And I just taught a couple of third year segments and it's working fine. It's very different. It's different, but it works. So I'm actually enthusiastic about it, but of course I still see that we are also standing on the shoulders of what we did with live segments before we went into the Zoom segments. But funny enough, I also started two training programs, one last in autumn last year and one in spring this year. We had with one of the groups, I only had a 5-day segment where we met live, and after that, we only met online so far, 3 more times for 5 days. And actually, I still have people signing in. They never saw me, but they like the training program so much that they just stay and do it. So I think we can do a lot online, and it's a wonderful chance for us now, actually.
Okay, so you said it's different, right?
For sure.
So how specifically? Is it different?
So there's a few things which are really important to understand about the difference between live and online teaching. So the thing which is more about the learning situation itself is that you are not in one room with the other people, which means all these little side social events which usually happen in the training room when you say, well, let's come together and do an ATM, and then it takes like 10 minutes, everybody's chatting to each other, they sit at the side until they finally lie on the floor. That's not happening. So when you say, well, we're going to start again at 4:30 and I teach for an hour another ATM, then people are sitting there at 4:30 in front of their screen. And if you come late, at least in Germany, they don't like that, because it's really boring to watch, to look in your computer screen without anything happening. So that's one of the things. You have to be much more precise about your timing and the procedures you're doing. So you have to plan better. The other thing which I learned was that you have to teach much more precisely. Because, I mean, all the things you can do in the interaction with your students while they're sitting next to you and watching you doing something, that's not really happening. So I have to be much more precise about how I go about showing some FI. I have to be more precise in what I say and what I don't say. And also what I learned was that the questions the students were having were much more precise. Because there's always a first phase in a training program when you start teaching online. That's the first couple of days when students don't dare to ask questions. So at least in Germany, it's like that. So they look in your screen and they wait for you to entertain them, but they don't really ask questions. So what I started with each group to do is basically I put them in small groups and let them develop their questions in those small groups, and then have one speaker of that small group come back to the big room and ask the question then. That worked. And after like 3-4 days, you don't need to do that anymore because people are are brave enough to ask their questions live. And then what I learned is that the questions get much more precise. It's the same process, I think, because all these fluffy questions they usually come up, where it's basically they trying to get a confirmation for their thinking by asking a question and these things, that's not so much happening anymore. So you get much more precise questions. So that's interesting because it really leads you to what the trainees understood and what they didn't. I really like that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when you said it makes you more precise. It made me think about teaching when there's a blind person in the room, right? Which also makes you way more precise because you can't say, hey, look at this, and then there's that. I mean, you have to, you know, as parents say, use your words, you know, and be really specific. That's a challenge I really enjoy as a teacher.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about your stories about that several times over the last weeks. I remember we've been talking about that many years ago, how much you learn from teaching a blind person. And sort of, and I mean, it's not the same, but sort of it is like that. I mean, what you have to do is to make people see is you have to upgrade in your technical stuff you're having around. I mean, since we met last time, Larry, I've upgraded a lot. So with what I started like 4 months ago, that did not work for the torture I was putting on myself over the last weeks. So I've upgraded. I bought 2 new computers. I have now 5 cameras in the room. I've got stands and I've got lighting and I've got a virtual background, as you can see, and all that is something you need to do to make people, to give them a chance to see what you're showing.
Okay. Can you give us a little tour of your tech there?
Yeah, if you like. So the first thing which is really neat and handy, that's this little thing here. Let's see It's an Elgato Stream Deck. That's what it's called. Okay. And what you can basically do is I press a button and I switch to a different camera. Or I press the next button and I have the next camera. Or I press the third button and then you see me how where I'm sitting actually. I'm sitting in front of my, this is where I am.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting behind the computer. So let me just go over there and I take this camera here.
Can you say the name of what that was again?
It's an Elgato Stream Deck. I can show you again later. And actually what I do is all the cameras I'm having are actually iPhones or iPads. So if you want to see, that's like the one room. And the advantage about an iPad, for example, if I go here a little closer, when I switch to that camera of the iPad, I can see what people are seeing. So I see on the screen what the camera is showing. Then here I've got a second monitor standing there with another iPhone on top of it. And that's the one I'm talking to while I'm teaching FI. So I see what's happening with that room. Then the room here in the back with the green screen in the background, that's basically my place from where I teach ATM and from where I teach when I'm talking to the students without having to show anything. And well, the room is, and then I've got 5 lights in that room. I mean, all these is lighting, and you really need that because the enemy of teaching online is sunlight. That's also what I learned. So I put the camera back and come back to my.
Yeah, I have used like a phone and my computer as a camera at different times. So I have more than one camera.
But, yeah.
What's the name of the screen changer? Can you type that in so we have
sure.
that?
Sure.
That's cool.
It's really, and basically what it does, it's basically sending hotkeys to your computer. So what I'm using, oh, that's also very important to understand. I'm not directly hooking into Zoom. I'm using a software in between Zoom and my cameras, which is called Manicam. But that's a Mac software, but there's also similar things like OSB. That's one thing you could use for Windows. And so Manicam is like giving me the options to have like up to 20 cameras attached to it. Or I can see when I do this here, I'm just pressing a button and you see that's now the sign for pause, a break now. Or I send them in small groups and I have something like this happening. So that's all settings in Manicam. And the thing itself, I type it in the chat. It's Elgato Stream Deck. And there's different versions of that. I've got the middle-sized one with 15 buttons. They have one with more buttons and less buttons. But that's really handy, especially when you're sitting at the table and you're showing something, and then you want to change the camera. Then I have that little box next to me, and I just press on one button, and I've switched to the other camera instead of going to my computer, pull up the menu and change to the other camera. So that's really neat. But I only discovered that by accident, and I was teaching for weeks without that. It's a pain in the ass, especially when I didn't have anybody in the room who was taking care of my technique.
That's awesome. Well, you know, I'm a geek, so I like that stuff. And all right, so that's the technical part. How have you been able to? So you were talking about teaching FI online. So maybe you could talk a little bit about how that's different and the particulars of it. Besides having to be more specific about what you're saying and showing too, right? Because you do have you can control in some ways the camera angle. So everybody gets the same perspective, which is really hard to do in a live room.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so that's kind of cool. And you can re-show what you've done. And I know that like you know, it's like watching a sports event. The replay is really useful.
In many cases, I mean, I'm to re-show what I've been showing in a live situation, that's quite complicated. Because at least how I do it is basically Zoom is recording everything. And then, you know, after you shut down Zoom, it takes time to convert and all that. So it's not, you cannot just switch back in the live situation and re-show. You actually have to redo it again. I mean, one fundamental, I think, and this was only possible in the segments more recently, because in the very beginning, when we had that very strict lockdowns in Germany, it was really not possible for people to be together in one room. Now what I do, I mean, I'm sitting here in Bavaria, some like 600 kilometers south of Berlin, and I was teaching the Berlin group last week. And the group is coming, they try to get together, several of the trainees are trying to get together in one room, so they're watching together, so they can practice on each other. And that's another thing, which is also like more on an organizational part, because we have some trainees who are really living in rural areas, where they can't come to Berlin just for one afternoon and practice FI. So what I encourage them to do is to invite either a friend or a relative or somebody else to have somebody in the room to practice on whatever we showed or I showed. And which makes it, of course, I have to be more in time about things because people don't want to sit around for 5 hours that somebody is going to practice on them 15 minutes at some random time. So it's very clear when I do the FI demonstrations and when the practice time for the FI would be, and then we meet together and there's questions. So I have to be more on time about these things, for sure.
Do farm animals count? Do you let them work with animals, or is it just
I count whatever they have.
So here, Ben, before you go ahead, Laura wanted to ask a question. Laura, what did you want to ask?
Hi, I'm Laura. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Laura.
What would be helpful for me, especially the third year, which is a particular interest for me, is if you could give us a little bit more context about like how the day is structured, how the segment is structured. How much do the students are staring at the screen? How are they doing projects? What type of projects? So like I could take just any segment you want. If you could sort of walk through us through the flow of the segment, I think that would be really helpful. And then we could sort of dive into the details.
Okay. So I try to resume just what I did last week. It was a end of third year segment for the Berlin group. And maybe one general remark first. I had like one group just graduated and a new one hadn't started. But during the first half year, I had 6 training programs running simultaneously in all phases of the training. So first year, second year, third year, and fourth year. So I was basically jumping through these segments and teaching different classes in different phases of their training. But what I kept constant is I invited all of my trainees of all training programs to join in the first hour of the day and attend my ATM classes. So, and I had like frequently between, not everybody showed up, of course. I also put these ATMs online so they can listen to that later that day. And so I usually had like 80 to 120 trainees being part in my online ATM classes. And that was always counted as the first hour of the day. So we started the first hour of the day with the ATM. And what I did, which is also very interesting, is I just went through material which isn't taught so much anymore. So for example, I taught all the 46 Esalen lessons in one row, starting by one, ending with 46. And then I did the Israeli Defense Forces workshop, starting with one and ending with 20. Then I did Peter Brook's workshop in 10 lessons. Now I'm going through the San Francisco evening classes material. So some of the lessons are repeating itself, of course, because the material is similar. I try to get the flavor of the lessons in the different materials. So I put the attention more on where Moshe or whoever taught that lesson was putting the attention as much as you can get out of the transcript. And that was really successful. And I also opened that up to, they could have their relatives joining or anybody. So I had a lot of people listening to that. So that basically left, the first hour was covered of the day, so to say. And people were lying on the floor. They didn't have to stare at the computer. And then usually the first round is, of course, I get them together and then I see if they have any questions. And then I go and, I mean, how I did that was basically I was referring back to a segment, two segments ago when I was showing a particular FI constellation. And then I asked them how much they would remember of that lesson. I was sitting there and I was their hands and they had to teach me how to do that lesson. Basically the idea was to remind them of what we did two segments ago, because that was where I was building on afterwards.
I've done that structure in live trainings as well, right?
Yeah, of course.
I hear the puppet master, I'm the puppet, let me know what to do.
Exactly.
I think that's really useful. And that, you know, in terms of the trainees being more specific, I think that inspires them to be more specific. It also means that they appreciate what we're doing a lot more, because they find out how difficult it is for them to describe what it is they're trying to say. So I love that exercise.
Okay. And from there, I just went on into the next functional integration in a sort of like a constellation. It was all about turning around your central axis. And I showed a few things and then I let them practice with each other. That's not so different to what you would do in a training room. And then what I invited them to do on the third day was to sit together. And that's
let me stop you for a sec. Because Alan asked a question a few moments ago in the chat. So when they're practicing with each other, are you watching them?
Allow me, if they keep their camera open, yes. But I tell you, to do that for 14 or 15 weeks is really hard. So I can't really sit there all the time. And sometimes I just leave the computer and just let them work with each other. I mean, I try to be with them as much as possible, and I'm always available. So I hear when they know they can call me at any time, and I jump in. But what I usually do is I shut off my screen so they can't see me again anymore. I shut down my microphone, and whenever they call me, they come in. But sometimes I also watch. We did a little process in actually on the last day of that segment where I put always two groups of them together, and one was working and the other was watching them working. So that's also a process you can do. And the other thing was, I encouraged them. So what I said was basically, after I showed the basic constellation, I told them, now please come together. And I put like three groups of them together. A pair of you sitting together and doing what we've been doing the last couple of days. And the others are telling you what to do, and you're trying to create a structure out of that. And then you take screenshots of milestones of that constellation, and then you type a few words to these screenshots, and you come back with a sort of like a comic book handout about the FI constellation we've been doing.
We call that a storyboard.
A storyboard, yeah, that's probably more like what you would say. And they enjoyed that. They really liked that. And in the end, we had like five different of these storyboards. And I sent all the storyboards to each of the trainees. So they had the different storyboards from different groups. So, I mean, you can use the technical stuff, which is available anyhow. Everybody's sitting in front of computers, so you can do screenshots, you can do pop-up Word, and they can write together like they've been sharing their screen, and one had a Word document or a Pages document open, and they were typing in and pasting pictures in, things like that. So in general, that's not so different. That's not so different to I would teach a normal training program. And here's the question about Alan: how many days do you do?
How many hours a day?
Yeah, I just do normal trainings, 5 hours. And I don't see any reason why not. I mean, it's not that people are staring in their computer for 5 hours. Really not. I mean, that's actually the least time they're sitting. I mean, they do the ATMs and they lie on the floor, so they don't stare in the computer. Then they watch me doing a demonstration. Well, of course, they have to look in the computer. Then they do small group work. I mean, I don't see why not. I started in the very beginning. I didn't even consider that you would have to do less. I mean, it just didn't pop up in my brain, to put it that way. And I never had anybody. I have one person who's complaining about that. And well, the frame I'm using is basically, well, if we meet together and we have lunch break and you come an hour late, did you ever hear me complain about that? So why don't you come an hour late now if it's too much for you?
Exactly.
So I don't really see why you would need to change that. It has to be interesting for the trainees. That's just like in a life situation. You have to be entertaining.
You're supposed to be interesting?
Yes. You have to have fun. I mean, one thing, Larry, I really enjoy what I'm doing, and I think that's an important part of that.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand. Can you tell us of a mistake that you made and what you learned from it?
Let me think. Do I do mistakes?
Well, if there was something you could do.
Well, there's a few things which are really like, I constantly keep forgetting to give them enough breaks. That's, for example, one thing, because it's really different because in the training room, I see what's going on and I feel the vibe in the room and I can adapt to that. In these situations, basically, I mean, for example, I show something, then I let them practice. And that, as I said before, I'm watching part of that, but it also gives me a little time to relax. Then I come back again, start my teaching, and don't think that they didn't have a break. This happened frequently. It doesn't happen so much anymore, but it happened in the beginning. So I overdosed them, I'm sure. And that's one thing. What else? Real mistakes. It's hard to, these tiny things which happen all the time. You say something and you regret to have used that sentence a few minutes later and these things, but that's not different in a virtual situation than in a life situation, I would think.
So you were talking about, a while ago, you were talking about the how easy it is to get people to come back for the next part, right? Because in this situation online, compared to people taking a break and trying to get them to come back, but part of what's missing in this situation is the socializing aspect between the students. In the kind of offhand way that it happens, in a break. So have you done something to replace that?
Well,
how do you address that?
A sort of. I mean, the best assumption I found so far, which would replace that, is that I offer them usually to go into small groups during the breaks. especially during lunch breaks, I put up breakout sessions, but I leave it open to them. Of course, it's not like a forced breakout. I just randomly put them together, and if they want to talk with each other, they can. But they can also like in a normal training situation, they just go for a walk in the forest or whatever. So I try to do that. What we had was with several groups that they starting to use Zoom meeting outside of my classroom together. And that's also very nice when they start doing that. I have a second year group now, which is going which is coming shortly into the ATM practicums phase. And they basically, what they do is they listen to my ATMs in the morning, then they take the transcripts of the lessons and compare how I was teaching the lesson to compare to the transcript, and they discuss that in Zoom groups. And I'm sure they will be prepared perfectly for ATM teaching once they get to that. They have like an example of like almost 100 lessons now, which they can compare to the transcripts and just see how I'm putting the attention and how I'm putting the emphasis in these lessons and why I'm changing some things or which variation I add in at some point. And I think it's a wonderful way. So I think what's a side effect for sure is, but I think that's in general about the whole situation we are having right now. Unfortunately, not for the German schooling system, I have to say. But in general, I think people will learn a lot on how to use all this digital media for learning now. And I hope that they will keep on using this media afterwards, once we get past the situation we are in right now.
Alan had a question.
Actually, first of all, it's really quite impressive what you're doing, because I've been thinking about a lot of this stuff myself, and I'm learning a lot just from listening to you. And it's actually a double question, which is something that I'm very well aware of how I would address it live, and that is the quality of touch and their self-use, especially if I'm not watching them doing the FI. So how do you work with that specifically?
The quality of touch that's one of the aspects I really think which needs also live attention. Some have it in apostrophes and others won't have it. And it's really, I try to, you should listen to how I teach ATM. And that's the best way really to bring that across. But it's not really something you can really address, because even if you're looking at them, you can't scream out from the computer into their computer and say, use less force. How much force are they using? How do I know? Some have terrible angles for their camera, and you can't really see what they're doing, and you can't really see how the person is responding to what they're doing. So I think that's really not so easy to address. The self-use, that was actually just an issue about in the last segment. And I sent them into small groups and trying to but this is the beginning of the whole discussion about their self-use. How do they realize that they are losing a good organization? That was like a question I asked them. So what do you sense when you're not organized well anymore? And trying to give them Larry is knowing from the approach where I'm coming from. So giving them a sensory marker where they can feel now they are losing track, or how can they regain their self-organization again. This is one of the things I was trying to address when I talked before, that I was putting them two groups together and I invited them to watch each other. So the other person was not meant to watch what they are doing, but to watch how they were doing it and give them hints. But that's my attempts to that, and maybe I would come up with more ideas.
So you know, like when I, what, one of the things I've learned in the last few years is when I, when we're doing the ATM teaching practicum, before we do the practicum, I ask the students and the groups to submit their teaching notes so that I can review them and I can talk to them about the teaching notes. Because I want to separate out the structure of the lesson they're going to teach and the feedback on that from the presentation of the lesson and their presentation skills. And, you know, so like what you're doing with the transcripts and stuff, that's a great, I love that idea. But I'm thinking in terms of self-use, like what I've done sometimes, and I think it works well, is to separate out learning self-use from learning FI. And so one of the ways to do that is to think about, well, like, how would you put a roller under somebody's knees or a pad under their head, right? So that, that the whole process of setting somebody up and how you move in relationship to the person and the table, that can be addressed there before we add in, you know, how do you dribble their head or whatever. So, I mean, I think those things you could do earlier and you could, you know, I do them in the process of teaching people how to observe movement. So how do you observe somebody, putting pads underneath somebody else's head or whatever. And then how do we talk about what is well-organized movement in that situation? And like you said, what do you sense internally that lets you know that you're off, you know, you're working too hard or whatever. And I think those are things we could practice separately.
I think that's, I'm typing that down, Larry. This is why I'm looking always to my other screen here. I think that's a great idea, yeah, to separate structure from presentation, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because it's, and I do think that this is one of the things we could do even, I mean, this context lends itself to that, because also we could have meetings with a small group of students, right? Which is what I was doing before, and I was doing that online before. I just felt like I was a little odd because other people weren't doing that. But, you know, I think that works really well. And those moments are important for me because then I start to get some sense of, you know, like how what I'm teaching is landing with the students and how they're using it.
Mm. This is actually one of the things I've been talking about before when I think about the longer future, what I've been learning over the last months means for my normal training situation, so to say. And I mean, I know, I remember you very well, Larry, when you were such a workaholic all the time, meeting with your trainees, yes, meeting with your trainees on phone conversations and stuff. I remember that very well. But what I think I will definitely do is that I will take a couple of the normal training days and put them into virtual training days so I can meet with my groups more often in between segments. This is something, yes, I really think is important, and that it's so great. I mean, because I can just sit at home here and meet with my trainees, and we don't have to all travel together and come together in one place, and I can catch up with them and see how they've been developing. I mean, I'm usually good on this side anyhow, because I'm only doing these 5-day segments these days anymore. So I meet with my trainees anyhow 8 times a year. I see them for a week, so it's not such long distances in between. But even more often, I think, would be helpful. So this is for sure something I want to implement. And I also see the advantage of having certain segments online.
Yeah.
Complete segments online.
Yeah, I mean, I meet with people in Amsterdam quarterly, and it's, I like meeting with people regularly, but I, look, compared to the training that Alan and I were in, you know, we met for 9 weeks and then we didn't see each other all year. Right? I mean, what a difference. Alan had a question. June has a question.
So I didn't realize you did 5-day segments, because my segments are 1 month long. And that kind of answers a question for me of how to navigate that. But then, you know, part of my preference to month-long segments is the amount of immersion that people get. And do you find that that's an issue that you consider or address in any particular way?
I didn't get the amount of, and then the word, I couldn't hear the, what did you say?
My segments are 1 month long, so there's a
this I understood.
Immersion. Yeah.
Yeah.
And my question is, in a shorter segment, do you consider the amount of immersion that they get in the process? Or do you find that 5 days is sufficient for you? For them?
For sure it's sufficient. Uh-huh. I mean, that's just my training was 4 week segments, like in the 1980s. Larry was a trainer in my program. We had an 8 week fourth year, which was a nightmare, I honestly say, because, I mean, what we learned from these 8 weeks was basically how to get overdosed and how to not remember things. And I would never do that again. And I mean, I see the point that there is, I always start a training with 10 days. So the first segment is always a 10-day segment, unless it's not possible differently. But I much rather see the advantage of the group coming together constantly instead of having the long segments and only meeting with them in long, in very distant periods of time. What my and my experience, and I mean, I can really say I've been seeing so many trainees graduating over the last 3 decades almost in the meantime, and the students are getting, from my point of view, the outcome is much better with the shorter segments. They are much more confident, they know more, they are not so dosed, let's put it that way, because it doesn't put them in that very special out of the world state. And they can just stay in within their limitations. And I see the advantages. And I also don't think that the way Moshe did it was the best pedagogical concept. I think it was an old man who didn't want to travel that much anymore. And this was the main reason why you had 9 weeks of training in a row. But from a pedagogical point of view, I don't see the advantages. I see the advantages of having longer segments. And we do that. Like I have usually in the beginning, I have a 10-day segment. I have like 2 or 3 10-day segments over the course of the 4 year. And the graduation segments are usually 2 10-day segments in a very short period of time. So like we do 2 weeks and then I have 4 weeks apart and then the other 2 weeks. That gives them the time to like practice and to come together to reflect on what is happening and then meet again. But in general, I don't think it's necessary to like dose them. June.
Yeah, I have to say, I like 10-day segments myself because I like more than 5 days. But I do, I agree with you. Like the longest I do in trainings now are 3 weeks.
Okay.
You know, and that allows us to do like certain things like headstand and judo roll and stuff. And my ideal training would be like an Alexander training. It would be a half day every day. Yeah, kind of like a college schedule, not segments, but kind of ongoing, you know. But that's a totally different model. June, you want to say something?
Well, actually, I'm going to hold my question. I just want to comment on this conversation because it's fascinating to me. I think you know, Moshe had different models, hanging out with Ruth Yalan and having her espouse that small group with 1 hour a day. There was a certain kind of transfer and internalization of the material. But I think, Alan, it's interesting to hear that you teach for a month at a time. I've been as a trainee in 14-day segments, in 5-day segments, in 17-day segments, never a month, Alan, but I appreciate from the point of view of being on a kind of personal journey of having that kind of immersion over that time that you're taken out of your everyday life, that something neurologically that has not been able to happen in a person's life can finally happen. But that's different, I think, from a point of view of a professional training where you're actually teaching people to become teachers. I didn't go to my training to become a teacher. I went to my training to save my life. And then I played catch up for 20 years, figuring out what I needed to learn in order to become a teacher of the method. So I'm hearing the virtues of both ends. Go ahead.
I guess a quick response to this, because I realized that the nature of these online trainings makes shorter segments much more possible and viable. And that, like, I'm on the same team as Larry. I'd rather do a day, a half a day or whatever, every day for over a year, you know? And that's what Moshe did too. I guess the place I'm coming from has been more logistical, because in my trainings, people come from all different places. Most of them aren't local. And so that's where the 1 month, or even I've done everything from 9-week segments to weekends and Wednesday nights. And so I've run the gamut of that, and I can see the advantages of both. And I'm just seeing here how this medium actually affords a different possibility that wasn't possible logistically before so much. Yeah. And still offers some shortcomings in terms of people not being together to practice. You know, that, and I'm more concerned about that in the beginning, or the beginning of the first year, the beginning of the third year, but yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'd like to ask my question. That was my comment based on what I heard you guys say. And my question was, Patrick, you said earlier, there are some segments that really lend themselves to be completely online. And I didn't know if you had a particular content or topic that you could speak to about, like, what are those that are especially useful for teaching online?
So especially, I mean, I can only tell you out of my experience I had so far. So maybe I would find out that every segment is especially good for teaching online once I did them. But so I really would encourage every one of you to do the graduation, the FI practicum, in this kind of a format. It's really so much more valuable than what sitting there watching students giving their FIs for like weeks, and then I can't really remember what they were doing. They can't really remember. They were so excited. Here you can watch the video and you can go back and forward and you can see how they were addressing their people. It's different. Of course it's different. So I'm also a member of the German TAB, and we just decided for the future situation that we only accept graduates who have done at least one live practicum and one can be done online. I'm not really agreeing to that, but I'm a part of a democratic process, so I'm following these rules. So the other one, which I found really, really, so there's, I give you a few more examples. So I'm having this second year group, and they basically been going through, like, I think 25 days of training now online in the second year preparation for ATM. Teaching. And they are doing great. I mean, this is just like, because what you do is they actually insist now. How I set it up was basically I put them in groups of three. And the groups of three are their working bases where they are preparing and interchanging, interacting about teaching ATM. And then I assign to them another group of three where they present their results or their teaching with each other. And I kept these two groups of three constant. They've been working over segments now together. And now they start meeting outside of class, and they're meeting in virtual rooms to teach each other. They are telling me they are meeting like twice or three times a week, and one is teaching ATM. And how I usually, I did that even over the last trainings, which I taught live. I want every trainee to teach at least a little bit every day of the second year. So they have to stand up and teach every day, even if it's only a 2 or 3 minute sequence, but they have to get used to like put their words and teach. And I start adding layers of understanding of the ATM, and also start adding layers of observing themselves while they're teaching. And this is so wonderful to do online, because you give them every day, you give them a little different project which they can address and consider and then use in their teaching. And when you have that little small groups, they get in a really good performing state where they don't have to pat each other all the time, but they can really be helpful for each other to become better teachers. That's what they are there for. So this went really well. Then another segment I had, that was actually for a fourth year group, where I was teaching together with my colleague Jeremy Krause. And we were both assigned to be together in that segment live. And what we did is, that was a two-week segment. And what we did is we split the group half, and Jeremy was taking half of the group for 1 week, and I was taking the other half of the group for the other week. And then we were changing groups. So in the second week, the group which was with Jeremy was with me, and vice versa. And we basically did the same material. Jeremy was showing twice the same stuff, and I was showing twice the same stuff. And then we put them together and let them interchange what they understood about the different things we did. So it was like a differentiation learning. And so you can use wonderful things to do.
Excellent. I appreciate how forthcoming and forthright you're being, because you're, you know, sharing what you're doing. That's really cool, Patrick. And it's, you said earlier that it wasn't hard for you because you enjoy doing this. And this is really obvious, and just you're telling us about it. It's, you know, like your delight in what you have been able to do really comes through. And I appreciate that. Maybe we see if other people, do you want to say something else?
I'm okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. Mary Beth, you had a question earlier. I don't know if you wanted to ask it now or somebody else. Laura, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll stop at 11. It's off the lead, but I also want to say ditto to what Lowry said. I really appreciate the conversation, and it's been great to be on this call. So thank you very much. And I have to go, so I apologize for that, but maybe we can talk more at some other point.
So. For those of you who don't know Laura, she's the creator of the Feldy Notebook. So, you know, thank you for all that too, for what you do for the community.
Yeah, and I'm also co-director of the Feldenkrais Training Academy, which is Jeff Haller in Seattle. So, so those two things. But really, thank you, Patrick. And I gotta go. So.
Okay, ciao.
Here's Mary Beth.
So I think there's a difference in setting up a training and having it be this way from the outset, and then trying to adapt a training that's already in process. I'm in Alan's Santa Fe 2 training. We're just this week going to start our segment 8. It will be a 4-week segment, which will now take 10 and a half weeks to do together, but we won't be meeting every day. And as Alan said, we do have, one of the things I like about our training is we have people from all over the place. And time zones mean that if you're doing things together on Zoom, you are now more localized. So you're not going to have people in Taiwan working on the same time zone with people in California and Utah. And that's, so this is where we are in our training, is trying to accommodate all of these things, but I don't know.
So I know very well what you're talking about, because I'm also on the InterTap, and that means we have people from Australia and California and Europe and Israel trying to meet together. And my time is usually 7:30 in the morning, so, and other people have to join in at 2 o'clock at night. But I mean, in Europe, the training situation is probably very different. We have much more localized market here. So as I told you, I've got constantly 4 training programs running in Germany. So the people are coming all over, let's say, usually people commute to my trainings. So they are living in the area and they come, and then I've got like a third of the people who are living too far away to travel every day. But they just rent an apartment or come to a house. But I mean, nobody who's living in Munich has to go to Berlin to join a training program. They can do that in Munich or close by. And that's from the distances. We are talking about 550 kilometers, so 350 miles or something like that. So, and we have like eight training programs running in Germany alone now, not counting the programs in the German-speaking countries around. My programs are totally German, so you can't join if you can't speak German. So that answers a sort of like, this is not like a really a consideration for me. I know there's different trainings happening still in Europe, like Vienna is having a very international audience. And this is probably a very different issue. But for my little institute, that's not a consideration. This is also like when we were talking about the 5-day segments, Alan, I'm really not so much thinking about a training program being a training program anymore. So I have students being students in my institute, and they can join several training programs and jump between the segments and do segments in different places. So it's not that contained situation we used to have when I started my career in the Feldenkrais method. And I'm actually thinking, I mean, I told you I'm a part of the German tab, and I'm actually thinking in a very, very different direction. I think we have to open that much more up. And we are right now in the process of going away from accrediting trainings to accredit institutes. That's the next big step we are doing. So an institute does not have to apply for each training. They are just running training programs, but you have to be accepted by the TAP or the German Guild to as a training institute to be a part of that clique, so to say. So it's a very different model to what we used to have. And I think, I mean, also our trainings are smaller. I mean, my trainings are having like 23, 24 people, some with only 18 people in the room. So it's not like a big thing anymore. And I have to make it possible to do such programs. And to make it possible basically means, as I said, I'm teaching basically week after week in a different training program. That's how I make my living.
Well, I'm just watching people's responses, Patrick, as you're speaking.
Is there anything interesting you see?
Yeah, I think. the overall story I tell myself is that the way that you're talking about it, you're drawing a picture that is allowing people to get a glimpse of what this can mean and what the advantages are, right? And I think it's you know, it's a shock for people to make the switch. And I think for a lot of people, I don't know, like I have this collection of articles about teaching, you know, what happens when you teach online. And you can tell in the first three sentences what the rest of the article is going to be like. Because either the person is going to tell you from the beginning, this is really horrible and it sucks, or this is really great. And, you know, I think you've done a great job of making the advantages clear, right? And what's really nice about what you've said is you've talked about it from, you know, thinking about it from the trainee's perspective, right? What their experience is like, what it takes to engage them, how to use, you know, technology, like with teaching with Jeremy simultaneously and then switching and then have people interact. I mean, those kinds of things are possible in classrooms, but you know, I think this leads to a different kind of innovation, right? And you know, maybe you could get away with teaching ATM, demonstrating FI, and sharing as the activities of your training when you're in person, but I don't think that works here. You know, we need a lot of other kinds of things. And I think also the way that you're helping students reflect on their experience as, you know, and you're using this medium as a way of supporting that reflection, and, you know, reflection's kind of like being aware. It's, you know, so I think it's fitting, the spirit of the work. I like that. Alan.
I'm having a great time. This is really interesting for me, so thank you. And I'm wondering, Larry, if this short conversation, can it be made available to all members of the NAATAB, of the EuroTAB, sure, of the AusTAB? Because I think if they watch this conversation, it would really help them understand both the kind of environment that we're living in right now and some of the possibilities that exist that I know they can't envision, you know, that's beyond their scope right now, because it's beyond most of our scope. I mean, you know, Patrick's been doing something and generating something that demonstrates its efficacy. And so that being said, the more we let these members know about it, I think the better. So,
right. And I mean, we have training accreditation boards, you know, across the world that have really different attitudes about online training. Right. So, I mean, some people are still kind of like, they're driving with the brakes on. Right.
But that's why seeing this would be so useful for them, I think.
I think so too. And look, the thing I love about it is, it's not me saying this, you know, because, you know, sometimes we have these conversations lately and I'm like, I don't want to say I told you so, but I told you so. So it's great to have somebody else say that. And also, like, I'm really happy to hear your report, because I know, you know, I know you like technology, and I know that I know your values about teaching. So it's really great to see kind of what has come out of that. You know, and I appreciate you kind of sharing the playbook, you know, like the specific examples. I don't know, is there anything you want to say kind of to finish up, or?
No. I can, Larry, I didn't manage to record the whole thing. My recording button is like flashing. So you have recorded, and I really would like to have a copy of that.
Absolutely.
With that.
I was thinking of that at the same time as you were thinking of it. I forgot to give you permission. But anyways,
That's okay. It wouldn't be very different. Being a member of the TAP and being a member of the InterTAP discussions, I know what you're talking about. And I mean, here in Germany, we started first to be very generous about online teaching, but now the other side is sort of like hooking in and telling you can't do more than 50% in any year, and you should not do more than one FI practicum online, and you have to do at least one of these online. And there's one thing which is also interesting from a training perspective, which is FI. How do trainees get their FI lessons? That's the next. We can shortly talk about that. But I think it would be great to like give that conversation to the different tabs. For what I learned is most people, if they haven't taught online like I did and Larry did, and maybe you did already, Alan, I'm not sure about that, you can't imagine what's possible. And and that's basically restricting their thinking. And because I think there's much more possible, and of course it's not the same. It's not the same. You have to be different. You have to adapt to the situation, but it's possible. So about students getting their FIs now, that's also getting really toughy now, because after almost half a year, not having many segments, but not meeting with each other. So what I started doing now is basically that I'm using the assistant trainers, of course, again, and the students are making private appointment with them, and that's a part of their tuition. So I'm paying for the FI lessons. And actually what we are trying to do is, and I got inspired also by you, Alan, that is that some of those students who are really far away, they start to get virtual FI lessons.
I'm working in the training in Australia next week, and we're doing virtual FIs with the students, you know, or distance ATMs or whatever you want to call them.
It's interesting. And I mean, yeah, it's interesting how we have to see what that means. Yeah.
As a trainee, I need to learn how to give virtual FI. Because in the United States, where I'm living, I will not be able to be in a closed and an indoor space with anyone for probably a couple of years. I'll be practicing with live people outside on my back patio for this last training segment, so that I will be practicing hands-on during my training. But when the weather, right now it's summer here, it's warm outside, I can do that. But I know that I won't be able to work indoors with anyone probably until 2022. So I need to know how to do this virtual FI.
And you're with Alan in the training, so you have a great resource.
This is now part of Feldenkrais education that is necessary to meet the conditions of the world that did not exist 6 months ago.
I mean, this is actually really scary what you're saying, Mary Beth. I hope it's not like that, but actually I'm also, I'm not very optimistic about the situation, and it might go on for a long time. And so maybe a last thing which I will start to do very soon in the second half year for sure, that's going to be that I try to like separate the classes into two halves and do hybrid trainings. So half of the group is with me in the room where the other half is somewhere at home and watching me teaching the group online. And then the next segment we would trade over, and the other half is coming into the room, because the spaces we are having are simply not big enough to have the people in the room. I can't create the distances which I have to have 1.5 meters in each direction in any way. And so even if I mean, for example, my Berlin group, that's the biggest group I'm having, that has 38 trainees. if I would have a room where I can make these spaces available, that would be a huge hall. So how would I show FI? They would sit somewhere like a couple of 100 meters away from me, and I would have to use screens anyhow and cameras because they can't see anything. So we're going to see what all that means, but it's a terrible situation. I mean, this is like really...
And look, some of that technology, like I remember there was a training in Melbourne that was held at the racetrack.
Yeah.
And I remember being at that training, and that was a training where they had a camera and they had a big screen, and they were using, that was the first time I saw people projecting the FI onto the screen. And it was really cool. That is an adjunct. What we do, I used to think of as high touch rather than high tech. And I think technology is a really wonderful thing. And I look forward to the time when we get back to being able to touch each other and to make that a part of the work. In the meantime, however long that is, I want to keep the work alive, mm-hmm. right? And I want to keep, you know, and our work is about being inventive and dealing with constraints, and we can do this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alan, we need to start in a few minutes because...
Yeah, and I'll be quick. I just, three things. One, I want to thank Mary Beth, who because I didn't look at the email out, Larry, I'm sorry. But Mary Beth pointed it out, and I went, I signed up for it immediately. And I'm really glad that I did. And Patrick, I want to thank you again for your forthcomingness with everything. And Larry, I want to thank you for organizing this. My only disappointment is that there aren't more people here. You know, that's the only thing. And the last thing I have is, are we all going to get the recording of this?
Everyone but you.
Oh, okay. I feel better about that. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, of course. Yes. I'll put it on the website and I will share it. Yeah. Thanks, and like the thing is, once we have it, then other people can see it. And my aim in doing this is there's the particular thing about teaching online, which is important, but it's also just about how important it is for us, all of us, to talk about curriculum, to talk about the method, not just from the point of view of the students or the teachers, but really from the trainer's perspective. Like, how do we think about how we learn about the method? Because I think the ultimate aim in the method, you know, is not for people to become trainers, but for people to be experienced teachers in their community and bringing other people along. Yeah. Right. And to think about how we learn this and what it is. I mean, I revel in these conversations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to have them not just with the people who, you know, like amongst trainers after work one day. I think it's a useful thing for all of us to participate in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm glad the rest of you showed up too. Thank you. Anybody want to say anything before we sign off? All right, Patrick, thank you so much. I'll say one last thing. When you say this, I'm like, wish my German was better. I would really love to come and be a fly on the wall and watch what you're doing. It sounds, you know, the best thing about it is it sounds like fun. When you talk about it, I feel like I'm missing out on something. Not like it's some horrible thing I have to do, but it sounds like, wow, this is cool. So thanks.
Thank you very much. Ciao.
See you guys.